Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you, chose that you should exist, chose you, consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed, and we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all hearts, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way, and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be. That you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of. That you deserve the existence you have been given, or it would not have been granted to you. That you deserve all the love you can imagine, because love is what you are made out of. That you deserve all the light you can create in your life, because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
Good evening. Welcome to Revolutionary
life. Right here on Blog Talk Radio, guys. We're here on Blog Talk Radio every weekday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are Monday through Friday, guys. And so tonight, it's Wednesday night. If you're new here, I'd like to just make sure you understand that all of our shows are archived, guys. Everything is recorded. So if you're not able to listen to this presentation in entirety, don't worry about it. It will be recorded, and it will be put in our on-demand section. And if you're looking at my site right now, if you scroll down, you'll see an on-demand section. And this particular presentation will be on that section in about an hour after we're done here tonight. All right. Revolutionary Life. For you new folks, it's the way we talk about the things here that affect our lives every day. Some indirectly, some things affect us directly. But we speak to those things from a revolutionary point of view. All right? And revolution is just change. The revolutionary is just someone who wants to be on the vanguard of change, as opposed to behind change. Or as opposed to the reactionary who tries to hold back change. But we know change is constant. So we try to keep our fingers on the pulse around here. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in. We're coming to the end of our section on the title, When God Was a Woman. Now, you'll notice that this is part four, because this subject is a deep one, guys. It goes and it goes. And so, if you did not hear part one, if you missed part two, if you missed part three, all of those are archived. They're right there on our on-demand section. Get in there when you have an opportunity. And you can listen to the entirety of those three presentations. Now, make sure when you listen to part three, make sure you're listening to part three otra vez. We had to do part two again because part three did not come over very well. So there's one very short one that's only about 30 minutes. That's the one that didn't make it. It shows up there, but skip it. There's another part three. That is our attempt at doing it again. And I think we did that one successfully. All right. And so now we are at part four of When God Was a Woman. And I promised you that this one, this last one, would delve a little bit into the esoteric, into the occult, into secret societies, symbols and signs of the divine feminine that is all around us. Some you won't ever be told about. Some you will look at and not even realize that's what you're seeing. And nobody's going to tell you. I am tonight. When God Was a Woman. If you listened to my previous presentations, you've heard me attempt to explain what I mean by that, right? And that historically, as you probably know, if you know anything about ancient history, you know that there was a such thing as goddesses. There were gods. God. But there was also something in the old days, ancient times, that were called goddesses. Now, today, you don't hear about that. Everybody can talk about, you hear God all the time. Any temple, any church, any synagogue, any mosque, you will always hear about God. But these days, in modern society, you never hear much or anything at all in these temples of worship. Spiritual worship, for sure, religious worship, about goddesses. is rare, if at all. So what happened to the goddess was what these sections were about. There was a time when God was a woman. And to find out what happened to the goddess in history and society and religion and other areas, we had to go back. We had to go back in time. We had to. And so that's why it took so long, guys. When you lose something, the general practice is go back to when you last had it. So I took you back to when we last had it. When we last had gods that were female. When we last had the goddess. When we last had men worshiping at temples of women. Mm-hmm. When all our oracles were women. Mm-hmm. When many of our deities were women. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I told you in those other presentations how year after year, time after time, with the advent of new religions, specifically the Brahman religion, specifically the Abrahamic religions, specifically the Judeo-Christian religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, we lost her. It seems she disappeared. God is a man now. You will often hear God, he, when someone speaks of God. God, he didn't want this to happen. Or God, he said this, or he said that, or he did this, or he did that. And so we do live in a patrilineal society, a male-run society. And most everything is male-run, patrilineal, have been for years. I told you that a woman had to wait to the 20th century to even vote. Mm-hmm. An ex-slave could vote. An ex-slave could actually hold office. But a white woman couldn't vote. It wasn't until the 1920s when a white woman, she was white. She wasn't a slave and never was an ex-slave. She wasn't black, a person of color. But a black man who was a slave in the 1800s, in that 1800s, could vote and hold office. I want you to look up the Reconstruction period right after the Emancipation Proclamation, or right at, not the Emancipation Proclamation, but right after the 13th Amendment and the freeing of all slaves, black men could go and vote and run and hold office. I told you in Mississippi, there was a black lieutenant governor in 1898. But still, a white had to fight. Look up the suffrage movement. It wasn't until the 1920s that a white woman was allowed to vote. But the lowering of the woman in religious practice occurred very early on with these Judeo-Christian religions. And there were no goddesses in them. And this also extended into society. So it went farther than just the religious institutions. It also extended itself into society. But she became the housewife, the domestic. And I do a whole presentation on that, guy. So you got to look back into all of that to get some of that. I told you about the rodeo and the bronco buster and something called animal husbandry. If you never heard of the science of animal husbandry, look at my last presentation. Animal husbandry was the domestication of animals, and I was just mentioning in that presentation how I moved from farm animals to into the farm. The practice moved from farm animals into the farm house, into the family. You will notice if you study that, there's books on it. You can get one on Amazon. If you study the science of animal husbandry, you will see some similarities there. Now, however, in this particular presentation, we were going to get esoteric on you. So I hope you're ready. We might even delve into it a little bit of the occult where the female is concerned. And what you're going to find, of course, is a very interesting thing in today's society, as in the past, that even though we live in a patrilineal society, even though she can't be a she couldn't be a rabbi, she couldn't be a pope, she couldn't be an imam or a mahdi in those religions, she couldn't hold hierarchies in those religions. The same thing in society. Things are changing, thank goodness. But she has a history of being educated, programmed, I don't know, I guess you call it programmed, because it's been going on for quite a while to the point where I think she's accepted her position. And so, and it's not her fault. Not her fault. She lives in a patrilineal society. So the idea of female hierarchy doesn't work. That's only been true in patrilineal societies. We might look at my past presentations, please, and we'll talk about a time when there were matrilineal societies, women hierarchies, women-led. Go back and check those out, and you will see that there was a time. And like I said, guys, when you lose something, if you want to go back and get it, if you want to find it, you usually go back to when you last had it. So I take you back in those other presentations to when God was a woman. All right? And so, but I have some news for you. In this presentation, I'm going to skip over into the esoteric world, the occult world. And I'm going to tell you that even in a patrilineal society, even a male-run society, undercover, unbeknownst to you in her, the divine feminine still rules. You won't be told that. But I'm going to tell you tonight. So I want you to get ready. If you're prepared for this one, it's going to be a little woo-woo. It's going to take you some places you ain't never been before. But I'm going to try to bring it home to you guys. If you're not familiar with the occult, if you're not familiar with esoteric, metaphysical information, you're going to get some tonight if you hang out, if you stick around. And I'm going to show you where she shows up all the time in these societies and in these practices. It seems they can't do without her. And so I want you to prepare yourself for that. Get you a cup of coffee, get you a nice seat, whatever. And I'll be right back with When God Was a Woman, Part 4. I'm going to give you a little music. I'll be right back. And you're listening to Revolutionary Life. Now, I'm your host. My name is Gary. I'm your host tonight. And I, the title for tonight, of course, is When God Was a Woman, Part 4, The Esoteric. All right. Excuse me just a minute. All right. Guys, here we go. There once were a time, once upon a time, once upon a time, in certain parts of the world, the ancient world of the time, there seemed to have been a preponderance of females being born. It was rare for a male to be born at one time in certain parts of the world. There were just a preponderance of girls. There was a preponderance of girls being born, women being born, girls, females being born. So much so. Well, that you guys may have heard this. Let me tell you. Let me bring this up, and let's see if it rings any bells out there. That was a time when there was a stories written about Amazon women, the women of the Amazon, or the Amazonians women. This was a tribe of all women. They were great warriors. It is said. It is said that these women grew 6 to 7 feet tall. That these women were great warriors. And it is said that they had powers. They were clairvoyant, clairescent, telepathic, all of that. They were like goddesses and their capabilities. And I want you, there was so much so that women were being born that in certain parts of the world, certain cultures where the male where there were attempts by the tribes of certain cultures to usher males into the world. There were so many girls being born that in some tribes, they purposely did things to ensure that a male be born and not a female. Now, you might hear some of that today. You can put a pin in that, guys. I'll get back to it. But you might hear some of that today. I mean, I don't know. Where I come from, I've heard of here and there that women would talk about how to ensure you have a boy instead of a girl, methods to use and sex and other things that you could, methods you could use to try to have a boy instead of a girl, because nobody knew what the baby's sex or gender was going to be. Until the days of the sonograms, before the days of the sonograms, nobody was sure if there was going to be a boy born or a girl. There was no way to tell early on. And so some tribes in these cultures where girls, where the preponderance of little girls were being born, they tried some things to usher in males into the world. One such thing they tried was as soon as a baby, they didn't wait till it was an adolescent. They didn't wait till the baby was grown. They didn't even wait till the baby could walk. almost as soon as a baby was born, they would actually take a knife, a blade, and truth of the matter is, the history goes, if they didn't have a knife or blade, they'd use their teeth. And these ancient tribes, in an effort to bring boys into the world, since there were so many girls being born, this ancient tribe, as soon as a baby was born, would take a blade. And like I said, sometimes they use their teeth. That's true. And they would go around the circumference of his penis, of his tiny little penis, a fresh baby, tiny little penis. They would go around that penis with a blade. And their goal was not to cut the penis. The goal was to remove the foreskin from the penis for fear, to ensure that it was going to grow up to be, in their mind, grow up to be a boy. The baby was so small that they couldn't be certain that they weren't looking at a clitoris, I guess. That's the way I probably imagine it. Maybe they thought it was clitoris. Clitoris come in different sizes, as you may know. However, they didn't take any chances. As soon as that baby was born, in order to usher a male into the world, they would immediately go around his penis with a knife. They would go around the circumference of the penis with a knife to remove the foreskin. This going around the circumference of the penis with a knife was later called circumcision. Circumcision has an ancient beginning. And it began around this period that I'm telling you about now, where there was this certain areas of the world that was women, girls being born. And so to bring men into the world, people tried to come up with different methods for doing so. And this one tribe had the method of circumcision, going around the circumference of penis, cutting off the foreskin to make sure it wasn't a clitoris, I think. Anyway, the woman in ancient times is said, especially these Amazon women, this tribe of women I was telling you about, these Amazons who were 6 feet tall, who were clairvoyant, who had all these powers, they say, and were great warriors, by the way. These women also didn't have menses. These women, let me say that again, these women never had menses. They did not have menstruations. They did not have a period. That's the story. These Amazon women, they never had a period. Or menses, as it's called. Now, I'll stop right there, I guess, before I go forward. I'll stop right there and I'll try to remind you guys that even today, right now, thousands of years later, there's the remnants of that still exists. Thousands of years later, there are little girls in our society that if you're a man, you may have no idea, but if you're a woman, you might. There are little girls in our society that are late, they call it, and I'm quoting late, that are late in coming into menses and having periods. They say they're late. And that means that they're old enough to, but they're not having menses. This happens today. And they will take that little girl to a doctor to induce menses. You don't hear me. It's a crazy process, but it's done today. If a little girl is late, quote unquote, and having periods and coming into a first period or menses, menstruations, then they will take her to a doctor like she's sick or like something's wrong with her. Well, let's get into that just a little bit, guys. Menses, at one time, in one place, in history, was not a common thing among certain women. And in the Amazon tribe, I'll tell you about the Amazon, the great Amazon tribe women. You ever heard about the Amazonians women? You know, and I've seen guys call a woman an Amazon. If she's a big, fine woman, they would say, whoa, she looked like an Amazon, something like that, guys. So I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but that was a term, and that was a story. Believe, it's up to you to believe these stories. I'm going to tell it to you. I got women listening, so I'm going to tell it to you. I have to take it for what you will. And I know women have been told and sold on an idea that fits into a patrilineal male-run society. And so there are some women who will not hear this, period. Even the idea of this title, God was a woman, probably turned some women off. And I understand, it ain't your fault. But for those who will listen, I must tell you this story, these things. In high school, and some of y'all may remember this, I'm sure if you think back, in school, when we went to high school, they have records, so you can check it out yourself. The young girls in school would oftentimes get better grades than the boys. In fact, they matured quicker than the boys. Girls did. They matured much quicker than the boys. And they were more intelligent. It seemed. I don't remember a whole lot of girls failing and whatnot in school. But I remember a lot of dudes dropping out and failing and whatnot. When I went to school, usually the girls did their homework. They carried books home from school. We were kind of hesitant. Some of us guys. We were kind of hesitant to be seen lugging a bunch of books home from school. And some guys did, you know, and some of them we made fun of some of them. But it wasn't uncommon to see girls bringing their school books home to study and do their work. And while we were busy trying to get out of carrying books and doing work, because we wanted to have fun or whatever, the young girls in school oftentimes led the boys and education of all kinds, math, science, history, and all the way up. In fact, if you look at the charts, school scores, boys versus girls, you will find that girls lead out and the boys are behind. Well, actually, when a girl reaches menses, when she reaches the age of when she begins to have her periods and whatnot, you will notice that that graph of the girls' intelligence passing boys starts to come down, and it evens out around the end of high school. It starts to even out. So by the time they're ready to go to college, boys and girls are probably pretty much close together. And abilities, educational, intellectual skill. But before then, before they enter menses, they always exceed the boys. Look at the charts. They always exceed the boys. It seems that menses, when they come into menses, they lose a lot of magnesium. There's certain electrolytes. There's certain minerals and other things that are lost, if not replaced, that are lost during menses, during the bleeding. And and they have to be replaced. And if they're not, they seem to have an effect. But if you look at the chart, the girl, four actually boys in the early grades. It's only until they reach around menses when they begin to slow down and the boys catch up and they're pretty much even going into college, for instance. Now, besides those charts, I was telling you that the Amazonian women, these women who were 6 feet tall, these women who were clairvoyant, who were telepathic, who had all these powers, they didn't have menses. And like I said, today if a young girl don't have her period on time, she's late, I mean not beginning her period on time, they take her to a doctor. When I was a kid, I heard this, they took her to a doctor. And the doctor had a way of inducing menses. But some girls don't come into menses, don't have their period, as expected. This is not a medical problem. There was a time. These are just remnants, it's my understanding from the esoteric world, that these are just remnants of what a woman used to be. There's another thing she used to do if she was an Amazon woman. She used to be able to change the characteristics of a baby in her womb. She could decide some of the characteristics of the baby. Now, nowadays, guys, usually of a child, many of those traits come from the male. Right, the sperm brings this DNA, and it has traits. And in the natural world, if a female wants those traits, then she will have sex with that animal and gather those traits. And she does look for traits. That's her nature. It's a female in nature. She's looking for special traits because, just like females today, she wants her kids to be better able to survive than she was. You will hear people today that say, I want my children to have a better life than I did. Well, nature is the same way. So the female will actually pick the better male because, not because she likes him or she's impressed, she's gathering traits for her child because she wants them to be better able to survive the coming generations. Now, however, but these Amazon women were all women. And so, her child, they say, she could change the traits of that child herself, even in her womb. You don't hear me, so let me bring it home to you. Today, right now, in the community I was raised in anyway, maybe you guys may not know about this, but today there's something that a baby has that some babies will have referred to as a birthmark. Where I come from, there was a such thing as babies having birthmarks. I am told that the birthmark is a reminiscent, I guess you might say, of those times when it was much more pronounced. There's not much left anymore of that ability in today's women. Just to keep in mind that that ability existed, I'm told, that a remnant of that, a remnant, a part of that power still exists within women today, and it exists in the form of the birth mark. Now, when I was a kid, they would say things like, if a woman is pregnant, and let's say she's walking down the road and a rabbit jumps out and scares her, and when that baby is born, you feel a mark on that baby that looks just like a rabbit. Let's say if she was pregnant and she had a penchant for, you know how women get cravings? Well, let's say if she was pregnant and she just loved eating grapes. Sometimes they said that in my community, sometimes it was said that she marked the baby. And the baby would have a birthmark. And that birthmark would resemble a bunch of grapes. A small birthmark. But in December, if you look close, it looks like a bunch of grapes. And they would say she marked that baby. Wives' tales, old tales that have lasted throughout the centuries. But the birthmark, tarot world, the birthmark is a remnant of when she could change the characteristics of a child in her womb when she got ready and how she wanted to be. Let me continue. All right, because I want to get this out, guys. Believe it or not, this is the way the story goes. The Amazon, okay. There was a time when women gave birth without a fertilized egg. Let me say that again, another way. There was a time when a woman could give birth to a baby without ever having had a man involved. You don't hear me, do you? It was a process, and it has a name, guys. It has a scientific name, an ancient one. The name is Partheno, P-A-R-T-H-E-O, Partheno, Genesis, G-E-N-S-I-S, Parthenogenesis is when a woman has a baby and there was no man involved. She was never fertilized by a male sperm. Now, before you say I'm crazy, let's keep going. Parthenogenesis is a term that you can look up on your cell phone. It exists. It is something that occurs today, now, in nature. Well, these women of nature used to practice parthenogenesis. Let me give you another name for parthenogenesis, one you might be familiar with. Another name for parthenogenesis is virgin birth. Ring a bell? Virgin birth. How about another name? Immaculate conception. So before you tell me that I'm way off the base when I tell you the story of women having babies with no men around, I want you to remember something. Some of you are walking around members of a religious organization, institution, or religious ideology that in its own literature and its own scriptures speaks of a virgin birth. So just if you happen to think that parthenogenesis is some shit I made up today, I got news for you. It happens in nature every day and among plants and animals. And your biblical, some of you have a biblical text that if you bother to stop to think about it, has an account in it of parthenogenesis, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Doesn't it? So we're not talking about something off the wall or you never heard of. Come on now. Another word for parthenogenesis is virgin birth. Another word, immaculate conception. Parthenogenesis. So it was said that the Amazon women could have babies without a man being anywhere in sight. Now, having said that, let me say this. If a woman in ancient times had such a birth, they believed that that birth would bring a god into the human world to walk among us like a regular human. Let me say this again. Virgin birth, parthenogenesis, was something understood at ancient times to be the source of a way of bringing gods into the world to walk among us as humans. Right now, today, guys, folks, if you go to Greece, the country of Greece, the Grecian Isles, in Greece, there is a temple dedicated to Athena. Don't forget, the Greeks, after their encounter with ancient Egypt, worshipped women. I mean, they had a pantheon of gods. They had Zeus and Apollo and all that shit. But once they encountered Egypt through Alexander the Great, conquering of Egypt, and the libraries of Egypt, of Alexandria, once they studied and practiced in Egypt, they went back to Greece. And they had female gods. They named the capital of Greece after Athena. If you go to Greece, its capital is Athens, Greece. Well, Athena had a temple dedicated to her. The name of that temple, ladies and gentlemen, was called the Parthenon. The Parthenon. Its ruins, and I think they might have refurbished it by now, but its ruins still exist in Athens, in Athena's place, in Athens. Why do you think they called that temple the Parthenon? Remember parthenogenesis? Remember the term parthenogenesis, P-A-R-T-H-E-O, genesis, parthenogenesis? Well, the Parthenon in Greece was dedicated, it was a temple dedicated to the attempt to bring gods into the world. Let me say this again. The Parthenon that exists today, its ruins in Greece, was a temple built where virgin birth induced or attempted. Parthenogenesis was attempted because they believed, as I said earlier, that a virgin birth would bring a god into the world to walk among us like a human. Now, before you call this crazy, there are some of you who belong to religions that in their scriptures speaks of a virgin birth, an immaculate conception, speaks of that child, the result of that virgin birth, the product of that virgin birth, being a god on earth. And of course, I'm speaking of Jesus Cristo. I'm speaking of Jesus of Nazareth, the one they called the Christ, was a product of this very concept called parthenogenesis, virgin birth. Remember? Remember? So I just want to make sure you guys don't think I'm getting too deep in the weeds or going off into left field, as they say. No, no, no. You know, and you walk around with a religion that speaks to this exact same thing. Well, it's been around a long time, long before your religion. There was parthenogenesis. Long before your religion, there was women who didn't have menses. They were clairvoyant. They were telepathic. They had the power to change a child in their womb. And that child, born of a virgin, was considered by the Greeks to be the way a god came into the world. And so they built a temple that exists to this day called the Parthenon. Parthenogenesis, the temple called Parthenon. It's actually Athena's Parthenon, the female god. The female god that Athens, Greece, the capital of Greece, is named for. I want you to understand something. That Athena was a female god. Because parthenogenesis, virgin birth back in those ancient times, was believed in. But the result of a virgin birth, the result of parthenogenesis, the child produced by parthenogenesis, a virgin birth, was oftentimes, I think every time in ancient times, a woman. Now let me say that again. Virgin birth was expected to yield a female. Parthenogenesis, almost every time it occurs in ancient times, known to have produced only females. Athena, Parthenon, was dedicated to bringing gods into the world through virgin birth. That's why it was called the Parthenon. It was dedicated to parthenogenesis. Look it up. And, however, parthenogenesis was supposed to result in a god. That god was a female every time. Now, you have a religion. Many of you know, especially if you're in a Judeo-Christian religion, you may have an account in your scriptures of a virgin birth, parthenogenesis. You might have in your scripture that virgin birth leading to the birth of a god that walked among us like a human. But strangely enough, your god that appeared to this earth as a man, as a human, appeared as male. Jesus of Nazareth, the one they call the Christ. His birth was an immaculate conception. It was a virgin birth, the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's in your scripture. But in ancient times, before Christianity, before this occurs, that was virgin birth. There was temples built to usher in gods. But they were always resulted in a woman being born, a goddess, you might say. It's only when we get to the Brahman, it's only when we get to the Abrahamic It's only when we get to the Judeo-Christian that we also find virgin birth. We also find a God being born. But it's strange, was a discontinuation with history when it comes to the gender of that God. Strangely enough, a virgin birth is not something new. A virgin birth leading to the birth of to bringing of a God into the world in human form is not something new. What is new is that God in your religion is a man. That's a break with history, with this ancient belief. Parthenogenesis results in a female. Somehow, somewhere, it became a male. For the first time, a virgin birth yields, according to some scriptures, a man, when historically it did not. The worshiping of women as gods existed at certain times in history. Gods were born through virgin birth. History has virgin birth. Mary wasn't the first. In fact, there's a temple dedicated to it. And now, there are some societies in your society, and I call them secret societies. But they're not really secret since I know about them. I know their names, and you do too. That knows this. They know that the feminine was always. They know that the feminine, the divine feminine, was a god. They know that in ancient times she didn't have menses. She was 6 to 7 feet tall. She was clairvoyant, telepathic, and she could have a baby without a man. And she, not only that, she was a great warrior. If you look at Athena, they got a statue of Athena in Greece. Yes, she's a woman, but she's carrying a spear. Whenever you see her, she's carrying a spear, a quiver of arrows on her back. She was a warrior. The Amazon women are known to be great warriors, in addition to having other powers. And they did not have menses, by the way. And so, guys, there are certain societies where the concept of menses, the blood, where the concept of the female, the god, where the concept of the virgin birth, is known to be female. And they will show you that in their practices, if you are a member of their practices, you begin to learn this. What I'm going to do is I want you to reminisce on that. I'm going to talk secret societies and symbols in just a moment that will reveal what I'm saying, guys. Keep trying to bring you back to today and showing you examples or connections. And so I'm going to tell you where they tell you the story in the secret societies. When I get back, let me give you a little music, reminisce on that. I'll be back in a moment. and you're listening to Revolutionary Life. I'm your host. Gary is my name. Revolutionary Life is a talk show, guys. A call-in show. That is to say that I will open my chat and I will announce a call-in period in just a moment. We're getting close to that time. I set aside a time for you guys to be able to call in or write in and ask questions. And so, tonight, we're doing When God Was a Woman, Part 4. And we're dealing with a little esoteric stuff, but I'm trying to bring it back home to you so you'll understand. And so, let's begin again. I told you that I was going to talk about the worshiping of a woman that goes on today, but it goes on behind closed doors. All right? It goes on behind closed doors. And it is a reminiscence of an ancient time. Even though the woman in religions, for instance, in many religions, are not allowed to reach certain higher positions. We're not, historically wasn't. Things are changing today, they tell me. But historically, they were not allowed to reach certain positions in the church, temples, and synagogues. And they were not allowed to know certain things. They were allowed to come in and worship God. But in certain places, mosque, for instance, the women worship separate from the men. They can all go in the mosque. They worship in a separate section than the men. There are meetings that are held. All men and all women. Women can have their meetings, men will have theirs. And these are educational meetings. See, if a woman has a hierarchy in the church, then there are certain things she will be taught. If she doesn't have a hierarchy in the church, there are certain things she will not be taught. In many churches, synagogues, and temples have women groups within them. And those groups are separate from the men. In the Christian religion, for instance, there are nuns, there are nunneries, there are abbeys, there are places where nuns are, all women, right? Every nunnery, and look this up, guys, every nunnery must be overseen by a male. Hang on a minute. Okay. Must be overseen by a male. Priest, every nunnery, every abbey of nuns has a male who comes in and checks on them and makes sure everything's on the up and up. In secret societies, brotherhoods, fraternities, where women can't join, it's brotherhoods, it's the only bros can join, Many of these brotherhoods are Hellenistic. That's right. Many of these brotherhoods are Greek. And I just told you that the ancient Greeks worshipped women, didn't they? So let's go inside these groups for a minute. Some of these groups. Well, let's hang on a minute. Let's look at a few more groups and then let's look at some symbology here. In the esoteric world, or the occult world, you might say, the hidden world. Occult just means hidden. In the esoteric world, there are symbols in that world. And some of those symbols, guys, are male and female symbols. In the esoteric world, the curves, the circle is female. The angles and lines are male. And they will show you a drawing of a woman, a pencil line, a little line cartoon type drawing of a woman and a man standing next to each other. And they will show you the curves in this woman. And then they will show you an angular drawn man as an expression of the curve, the circle, the sphere being female, and the straight line. And angles representing male. Now, you will see this and miss this in your world every day. But there are some people who never miss it. In fact, they know a lot about it. There are some secret societies, so to speak, brotherhoods, where women are not allowed to join. For many years, they were not allowed to join. Today, some of them have set aside a part of their societies where a woman can join. That part of this, they have women congregations, all women. And when they finally let these women in, they can have their meetings and their training and education. But they will also have a man in that secret society overseeing these women lodges and gatherings. And the secret society, even though they will let women in, but they have to have their own little lodge, and they have to have their own, and they have to be overseen by males. In the Greek societies, there are similar fraternities for boys and guys, and sororities are set aside for women. Why this division, guys? What is it about God? What is it about secret societies that requires, for whatever reason, I want you to think about this as we go along, that requires that males, that women can't join, and even when they allow women into their societies, they have to have separate places for them, and those separate places are separated from the guys. The women over here, the guys over here. They have to separate the two genders. Okay. So what is it that they're learning? What is it that they're teaching that can't be taught to both sexes? Or that is not taught to both sexes? I don't know. Do you know? Well, here's something, guys. The Pope himself, in the inside of the Vatican, never outside, each day, it's my understanding, is part of his routine, and it always is a he, right? A Pope is always a man. As part of his routine, he stops in front of a statue of a woman, a black, by the way, Madonna, a black Madonna don't I? And and says a prayer before going about his business. Now you might remember, well, you might remember, you have, if you listen to 1 and 2, you might remember that in matrilineal societies in Africa, let's say, where it was common, I told you that the fiercest warrior in a Mandingo tribe would get up in the morning and go before his mother's hut and prostrate himself and would not get up until she came to the door to give him her blessing, and he would go to war or wherever. Well, interesting. When the Pope gets up in the morning, there's a routine, and that routine begins with going before a black Madonna and child as a prayer, with a prayer. And then he proceeds to go about his business. The, hang on just a minute, guys. Let me give you a little music. I got some noise coming in over my mic here that I don't understand what's coming from. Okay, no, I think we're good. All right. The Black Madonna is inside the Vatican. You don't see it very often. But I'll tell you where you do see it. If you are ever in Central or South America, and I tell you this in my previous presentations, guys, in my previous presentations on this, part one, part two, I mentioned to you that the church, the Catholic Church, has stated back in the day that one of the hardest jobs they had and converting pagans to Christianity was to stop them from worshiping women. That's right. One of the toughest jobs they had is to make these pagans concentrate on Jesus Christ, the male figure, and not a woman. So even when these pagans converted to Christianity, it was more likely that they would be praying to the Virgin Mary than a statue or picture of Jesus Christ. I told you that even on this side of the world, in Central and South America, that you are more likely to see the Virgin Mary painted on walls. Even I told you that even some of the gangsters, some of the cholos who paint their cars up, would have the Blessed Virgin on the hood, or they'd have a statue, a little plastic, icon, a little plastic statue of the Virgin Mary on their dashboard, not Jesus Christ. But the church said they worked very hard on stopping these pagans from woman worship. But obviously it didn't work out too well, because the Virgin Mary became an idol worship. The cult of the Virgin Mary exists today. And in Central and South America, there are ceremonies where the Black Madonna is not hidden inside of a church. It is carried on people's shoulders and they march down the street with it. That's rare in a Catholic ceremony in Europe, but in Central and South America, it is normal. You can see a large parade coming down the street, and they will be carrying on their shoulders a statue of the Virgin and Child, a Black Madonna, by the way. And so some of these secret societies that separate women from men, fraternities over here, sororities over there, or even inside the church, not the church, but let's say inside a mosque, if you go inside of a mosque, you will see that the women worship separately from the men. And I say, if the message is the same, why the separations? So I'm sure there are reasons that they may give. But they should be all learning the same things, which you think. I don't know. In certain secret societies, there's lodges for women, and there's a lodge for men. There was a time when a woman couldn't be in these secret societies. But they do include her now. Now, you remember me telling you about the symbols, the circle and the sphere and the esoteric thinking and the occult world, being the woman, being the female, and the angles being the male. And I don't know if how many of you are familiar with this, but Hermes used to be in Egypt. He was known as Thoth, T-H-O-H, Thoth. But once he got through Greece and then to the Romans, he was Hermes, Trismegistus. And they have a whole book on this teachings, let's say, of Hermes. And one of the teachings of Hermes, as he tells the regular person how to become enlightened, how to become godlike, he tells them to never follow the path of the angle, to always try to follow the path of the circle, of the curve. If you've ever read the Emerald Tablets, there's something called the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. This is part of the Hermetic teachings, Hermes, Trismegistus. If you read the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, the Emerald Tablets will admonish you that in your path to God, do not follow the angles, but follow the curves. And I told you that the angles represented the male, and the curves, the circle, represented the female. Now, there are secret societies who, as their symbol, have a square rule, say 90-degree angle, and a compass. Now, the square rule is a tool that carpenters use, masons, carpenters use to draw straight lines and angles. The square rule is a right angle. There is no left angle for some reason. And I may get to that tonight if I have enough time, but there is only right angles. There's only right-handed. There's only the right path, not the left-hand path. And occult, the left-hand path. We'll get to that right and left in a minute. That's male and female too, guys, by the way, in the esoteric world. I may not get to that tonight, but I got to tell you left and right one of these days. But anyway, there are some secret societies who have a square rule and a compass as part of their symbology. Well, we know that the square rule is a 90-degree angle. Creates a 90-degree angle, and it's used for making straight lines. And I told you that the angle and the lines were male. But they also have, over and above in their symbol, another tool. That tool is a compass. Now, I don't know how many of y'all have been a long time since some of y'all have been to school. And it's been a long time since some of y'all studied geometry and shapes and everything. But do you know what a compass is used for, this tool? Anyone? Don't worry, I'll wait. The compass had a tiny point on one end, like a needle point. On the other end, you put a pencil. It held the pencil. If you put that sharp point down on one side of the compass with the sharp point, if you put that sharp point down on a piece of paper and you turn that compass so that the pencil would make a mark, you could make a circle. The compass is a tool for drawing circles. On the secret society symbol, there are angles. The 90-degree angle, the square rule, for drawing lines in 90-degree angles. But on top of it, above it, there is another tool. That tool is a compass. And lest you forget, a compass is a tool for drawing a circle. I'm eating up you guys' time, but I'm going to have to bring it to a halt right now. All right, guys. I set aside a time for call-ins, and so I'm eating that up at this very moment. So listen, I'm going to open up my lines. My phone number is area code 319-527-6060. 319-527-6060. My chat room is open. I'll be monitoring that chat. Anything you put into the chat, I'll be able to see, and I'll be able to respond to the chat as well. If you call me, you're going straight onto the line. And so my lines are open for calls, and my chat room is open for comments in the chat. All right. I got to use this time before we close. We got enough time now to take some questions, comments, and things like that. So this is your time. I call it your time to shine. Let me give you a little music, guys, and make up your mind if you want to shine. I got my chat room open. I got my lines open. And you're listening to Revolutionary Life right here on Blog Talk Radio, guys. And we're here every week, day, night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm your host, Gary. My name's Gary. And tonight we did a thing on when God was a woman. In fact, we've done four. This would be our fourth segment. This particular segment was an esoteric one. I took folks out there who ain't been out there before, maybe. Hopefully, they learned something that's going on around them every day. But they won't tell you about it, especially if you're female. Because it's reminiscence. It's reminiscent. Some of the things they're doing, some of the things they do, some of the things they worship will remember you. It's reminiscent of a time when a God was a woman. All right. I took you down through there a little bit today, but I'm going to end it there, guys, because there's a bit more. In the esoteric world, there's a bit more. In the magic world, in the alchemical world, there's a bit more. Especially in terms of symbols of the female, for sure. but also the powers. The power. I just wanted her to know, as she's listening, that every woman, you've come a long way. Unfortunately, you came a long way down the ladder of hierarchy and spiritual and social leadership from the matrilineal societies to the religious community to the medical community and society. You were the first physician. And I speak to that in my earlier presentation, so I won't go into that. I want you to know who you are. Because in order for our species as human beings to progress, in order for our society to progress, it is important that you know who you are. I will tell you that there are secret societies who know who you are. And I will tell you that behind closed doors, you are worshipped, but only behind closed doors. I will tell you you have powers they wish they had, that you will never know about, probably. Even if you join one of these societies, which you were not allowed to join at one time, you will be separated out from the males in your degrees of knowledge. Yes, you will. But I wanted to tell you the esoteric side. I wanted to talk to you about angles and circles because you see them every day. You have no idea in the occult, in the secret worlds, what those symbols mean to people seeking power. But if you subdue the woman, you can subdue the man. In slavery times, the story goes that the woman would be brought in her husband or her man, someone who would ordinarily protect her. She would be brought out to watch her man being emasculated in front of her. And it was explained explicitly why this was so. Because if you emasculated the man in front of the woman, you remove her last vestige of protection. The man can't protect me. Look at what they're doing to him, and he can't fight back. And they said that she would then turn to her children, especially her male children, and she would tell them to be passive when it comes to that slave master, because she didn't want that child, that young boy, to end up like that man that is being emasculated in front of them. And so she would tell them, you say yes, sir, and no, sir, to that white man. When that white man talks to you, don't look him straight in the face like that. When that white man tell you to do something, you do it. She will begin to teach that little boy, not because she want him to be submissive, but because she don't want the same thing to happen to him that she just saw happen to the biggest, strongest buck on the slave plantation. The man who ordinarily in nature would have come to her defense if she was attacked. She is to see him be emasculated in front of her. And if you do that, it's almost like removing her last vestige of any kind of protection at all. And she feels a hell of a lot more vulnerable now. And so she will turn to her little boys, and she will make sure that they don't end up like him by telling them to be submissive. She will teach them generation after generation not to toughen up in front of that man. To bow your head in front of that man, in front of that slave owner, so you don't get hurt or killed. And so that was a practice of emasculating the man in front of her. So if you can weaken her, she will have the rest of the men in generation after generation after generation after generation after generation. She will teach them to be submissive to their owners, to the powers that be. The idea was not so much to hurt the man. They did. The idea was to get at her. That's the key. I have a slogan on my site oftentimes, an old African proverb. And that proverb says, if you educate a man, you educate an individual. If you educate a woman, you educate a nation. It's an old African proverb. A child, even if that child was to be sold off into slavery, for the first few months of the child's life, he would be with the mother, feeding him, breastfeeding him, taking care of him. Once the child was old enough, they would take him from the mother, say about 7 years old. They would take him from the mother, and they would sell him. They could sell him and do whatever. But they would let him stay with the mother from 1 year old and 2 year old and 3 year old. That's a method of slavery that goes all the way back to biblical times. That's right. It goes all the way back to biblical times, guys. If you tell somebody you are Jewish, they would want to know if your mother was Jewish. That would make you Jewish. Well, it's just like in slavery times. The mother could take the opportunity while she has the child, 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, and she could teach that child who he really is before he's taken away and sold. So she had the opportunity. She was the one who had the opportunity to tell that child what his true lineage was. But also he would get the talking to. He would get the message on how to deal with the white man so that he didn't end up being emasculated like the men, like the demonstration she just saw of her man being beaten down to begging to live from the white man. If you do that in front of her, she will make sure that her little boys never end up like that and tell them how to behave in front of the white man. You don't hear me. I know you don't hear me. But I got that talking too. And how many black men out there can tell me that they didn't get that talking too? When I learned how to drive, I got the talking too. When I learned how to drive, my mom told me, if the police pull you over, these are the things you do. You say yes, sir, and no, sir, to that officer. You keep both hands in clear sight. Put them on the steering wheel so he can clearly see both. She educated me on how to deal with a traffic stop, police officer. So they're still doing it today, the women. Are making sure that her sons don't end up dead or injured. So you'll get, if you're not an African American, if you didn't come up in some communities, you may not have never got that talk. But since slavery times, the women have had to give her sons that talk. Oh yeah, still goes on. It ain't ancient history. Not really. It's time for that thing to change, and revolution is nothing but change. This is Revolutionary Life. That's the name of this program. We deal with every aspect of life from a revolutionary point of view. And like I said, revolution has just changed. And things are changing. But revolutionaries want to be out there on the vanguard of that change. If you're on the vanguard of change, you may have something to do with how it's shaped as it evolves. So we try to keep our fingers on the pulse of change around here. And women may be ready to now come into their own. And when they do, they may take a note from the French. If you ever see a depiction of the old French Revolution, when the French threw over the kings and queens of France, Marie Antoinette and the like. If you ever see a drawing of the revolution, the French Revolution, you will see a crowd of people headed towards the king's castle to throw him out. And leading that crowd and that drawing, almost everywhere you see it, leading that crowd will be a woman carrying a flag of liberty. The statue of liberty, freedom, is a woman. Our freedom is on hold right now. We need you to come into your own. I want to thank everybody who listened in tonight for listening in tonight. My name is Gary, your host here at Revolutionary Life. And we're here every weekday night, so we'll be here tomorrow night. We have a different subject, guys. I think we've exhausted. We haven't really. But I think we've exhausted the call to the woman. And that's what this was, really. The men got an education, too. But ladies, this was a call out to you. Find out who you are. It's later than you think. Thank you again. I hope everyone have a great evening. I want to wish everyone a good night. Ciao. Arrivederci. Buenas noches. Buonanotte. Good night. Let me give you a little music as we go out.